That video clip is from the movie Where the Crawdads Sing. It was a fascinating book and pretty good movie. Certainly not written from a Christian perspective, but I love the raw honesty of the story and this conversation in particular. Tate begs Kaya to forgive him, and she says, "I don't know how." Some of you understand that kind of pain all too well. Things like betrayal, anger, hatred, brokenness, bitterness, reconciliation, forgiveness. These are the kinds of broad stroke topics that devastate some relationships, some of those things. They draw other relationships in tighter, stronger, more healthy than ever. How can we honor God with our brokenness? How do we deal with people who have wounded us? Or maybe people that we have wounded. What's the answer to relational heartache and relational pain? Maybe with a spouse, maybe with a friend, a family member, a parent, a grown child, an ex-spouse. How do you deal with anger? We've been learning in this series on the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus raised the bar on the traditional Jewish thinking of the audience of his day. He certainly raised the bar on our own culture's view of morality and of relationships today. He wants us to live beyond just being happy or just being kind or just being obedient. He wants us to live lives that are full of joy and purpose. He wants us to influence the people around us. He wants us to love him and to trust him and not just follow some list of do's and don'ts. Today, he's going to push the envelope even farther by talking about anger and condemnation, forgiveness, reconciliation. And the text for today begins in Matthew 5, starting in verse 21. He says, "You've heard that it was said," and he's going to do this several times in this part of the chapter. "You've heard this, but I'm going to tell you this. You've heard it was said to the people long ago, 'Do not murder.' Anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother, 'Raca,' is answerable to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says, 'You fool,' will be in danger of the fire of hell." Now, Jesus begins here with the sixth of God's Ten Commandments. You shall not murder. The King James Version says, "Thou shalt not kill." But scholars, all the ones that I read, agree that God's use of the word for murder here in the Old Testament Hebrew talks about willful murder, not simply killing. He's not talking about war. He's not talking about self-defense or maybe some tragic accident that's happened. He's not even talking about capital punishment. That's a whole other issue. The people in the audience of Jesus' time understood that premeditated murder was a criminal offense, and justice would be served against those who committed that crime. But Jesus went on to say, it's not enough to read, "You shall not murder," and say, "Oh, well, I've never done that one," and then go on about your business as if everything is in order. He raised the bar. See, the issue isn't just our actions toward other people, it's our attitude toward them, right? It's how we think of them. It's how we feel about them. It's how we talk about them. It's our thoughts. It's our prejudices toward them. I've known people, I bet you do too, who would never dream of committing a murder, but they don't think twice about murdering somebody's reputation or destroying someone's character with the power of their own words. They would never intentionally take a life, but boy, they take every opportunity to criticize and condemn. They would never throw a body in the harbor, but they harbor bitterness and they harbor hatred in their own heart every day. The Apostle John said in 1 John 3:15, anyone who hates his brother is a murderer. And he got that from Jesus. Jesus said here in the Sermon on the Mount that it's not enough to have never killed anybody. Are you holding on to anger and bitterness? Are you speaking badly about another person? Are you judging somebody else's value? He used the word "raca" here as an example. It was an Aramaic term that suggested someone was empty-headed or stupid. One lexicon said that it could be like calling somebody a numbskull or a blockhead. Kind of makes you wonder about Lucy's salvation in the Peanuts comic strips. I'm just saying, you know, kind of raises some questions. Jesus was saying that hostility and hatred, name-calling, those things are inappropriate. We may have a right to be angry, but we cannot let the anger control us, get the best of us. In fact, if calling someone stupid isn't bad enough, going so far as to call them a fool, Jesus says, puts you in danger of hell itself. Now, to a certain extent, Jesus is using hyperbole. He's using exaggeration here to make a point. But the word for fool, especially as we see it used in the Old Testament, alluded to more than a person's mental capacity. It was about their heart. It was about their soul. Remember, Psalm 14 says, a fool says in his heart there is no God. We may be judging somebody's salvation when we use that term. One commentator suggested that raka is an attack on someone's intellect, but a fool shows contempt for someone's character or their identity. You might think about it like this, that condemning someone for lack of intelligence is insulting, but labeling somebody as beyond the love of God is an affront to God Himself. We're suggesting that some people are beyond the mercy and the grace of God, and that puts us in grave danger when we start making those kinds of judgments. I don't think Jesus was saying that we would never get mad at somebody. I don't think he's even saying that we never should get mad at somebody. He got angry at injustice. He got angry at hypocrisy. But when we harbor bitterness and anger controls us, it's like we've pulled the trigger. It's like we've committed the murder. And if we curse someone, especially we condemn them to hell, we tell them to go to hell, well, Jesus says you may be in danger of going there yourself. See, the far better response to being wronged is forgiveness. Not anger, not bitterness, but forgiveness. Now, forgiveness is a tough word to get our arms around. It can be a difficult word to define. We often spend as much time talking about what forgiveness is not as we do talking about what it is. Forgiveness is not the same thing as forgetting the offense. Forgiveness is not the same thing as trusting the offender. Forgiveness is not the same thing or doesn't suggest that we have to be best friends again. Right? It's different than all that. It's more than all of that. Forgiveness is letting go of the offense. It's refusing to lash out or get back at someone. It's reaching a place where we can pray for God to bless that person, to help that person, to care for that person. The problem is, once we answer the question of what it means, it immediately raises about a million other questions. What if I forgive but I can't forget? Does that still count? What if the person doesn't ask for forgiveness? Do I still have to forgive them? What if I forgive but they keep hurting me? Do I have to just sit there and take it? What if they committed a crime against me? Does forgiveness mean that I should not press charges? Does it mean that they don't have any right to pay restitution or to make things right with me? When it comes to something on a global scale, like a 9/11 attack or the war in Ukraine, how do we forgive something of that magnitude? And who would we even forgive in a case like that? And then again, you have to say, well, what if I don't forgive? What if I refuse to forgive? What if I choose hatred or allow bitterness to take over my life and not seek reconciliation? See, these are big questions. They're important questions, and we can't answer every one of them in detail today. But think about this. 3 years ago, a bomb exploded at a construction site in Munich, Germany. It was not a terrorist bomb from Al-Qaeda. It was an Allied bomb from World War II. That bomb had lay dormant in the ground for about 75 years, and it was triggered by some digging that was being done near a busy train station. Now, that bomb wasn't deadly. Others have been in Germany and other European countries from World War II. But 4 people were injured when it exploded. Can you imagine something being buried underground? Nobody knows it's there. Unseen and yet still explosive, still dangerous, still even deadly. Friends, that's what unforgiveness is like inside of us. We hold on to the anger and we nurse the bitterness and we refuse to deal with the issues. And it lies buried down below the surface. Maybe nobody else knows it's there. But man, that is a bomb that one day might explode and the collateral damage could be devastating, irreparable. It's why Jesus says that forgiveness and reconciliation are the choice for believers. Not anger, not bitterness. So let's think about this. Let's talk about how to destroy our enemies. And you think, well, I didn't think we were going there. That sounds pretty good to me. How do you destroy an enemy? Abraham Lincoln once said, if you want to destroy your enemy, make him your friend. And you say, well, that sounds like cheap sentimentality to me. That's a little corny. I'm not sure that I think that even works. What does Abraham Lincoln know about a life like mine? Well, during the Civil War, 620,000 Americans were killed on both sides of the war. And Abraham Lincoln understood at a very deep level that every Yankee in the North and every rebel in the South was going to have to determine for themselves how they were going to respond to the heartache and the pain of all that had been lost during that war. And forgiveness is the key to healing. And reconciliation is the goal of forgiveness. That's what Jesus taught. That's how Jesus lived, and I would argue that that's why Jesus died. Rather than being angry and hateful, talking badly about those who've hurt us, we need to let go of the bitterness. We need to practice forgiveness. You can't just delete the memories. You can't just erase all the pain. But we can make a conscious choice to let go. We can give up our right to get even. We can stop wishing for bad things to happen to them. We can release the hurt, let it go. In many cases, we can even try to repair the relationship. Have I told you guys about the soldiers back during the Vietnam War? He received a Dear John letter from his girlfriend back home. She had found someone else, didn't even have the compassion to wait till he got home before she broke the news to him, just broke up in the letter. To add insult to injury, she says to him, would you send back to me that photograph that I gave you before you left? It's my favorite picture of me. I'd like to put it in the newspaper to announce my engagement. Man, she's just murdering him with her words. Well, news kind of spread around the camp and all the guys rallied together and they all found pictures of their girlfriends. They put them all in a shoebox and had him write a letter back to her that said, Dear Sue, please find your picture among the enclosed and return the rest. For the life of me, I can't remember which one you are. Now, there's something that feels like justice about that. And I realize that's kind of a goofy joke. I'm a dad. It's what we do. But look, the principle is valid. That while it feels good to lash out in the moment, forgiveness releases the hurt. It lets go of the offense. It helps us move forward and not just gaze backward. I give up my right to get back at you. Jesus raised the bar. This whole forgiveness thing is not only about refusing to dwell on the past. It's not that we walk away and pretend that nothing ever happened. Jesus said, we even try to reconcile. See, I think in this section of the sermon of his, the first part of the section, the first part of the material seems to be talking about our feelings when other people have hurt us or they've mistreated us, they've betrayed us, they've just ticked us off. We don't let anger destroy us. Truth is, he's going to push that a little farther at the end of Matthew 5. We'll get to it in a few weeks when he talks about revenge toward enemies. But here, the idea begins with how we deal with our anger. People who have made us angry. We don't badmouth them. We don't condemn them. But then in verse 23, he turns that coin over and he addresses what to do when we are the ones who have done wrong. We're the ones who've hurt somebody else. Somebody else is angry with us. We can't just lay low, avoid them, hope it all goes away. We have to reach out. We seek forgiveness. We take personal responsibility. Look what he says in Matthew 5:23. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or your sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you're still with him on the way, or he may hand you over to the judge. The judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. I tell you the truth, you will not get out until you've paid the last penny. All right, let's suppose that we're sitting here in church together, and I'm over here, and Mike, I'm going to pick on you, okay? Mike's over there, all right? And I know that Mike is mad at me, okay? I said something that hurt his feelings, or I promised I would do him a favor, and I forgot. Or he told me a couple weeks ago that he had some guests coming to church. Could I please have a decent sermon, keep it short? And I didn't, okay? He's mad. I mean, he's really mad at me. And maybe he has a good reason to be. And we're sitting here in church and we're singing songs about God's love and about Jesus' grace and about the Holy Spirit's presence in our lives. And we come to communion time and I bow my head and I say, Lord, I know that Mike is mad at me. I'm sorry, Lord. I never meant to hurt him. Please forgive me. And I take my communion and I say, boy, I feel better. Isn't grace wonderful? This is great. God, thanks for this time. You've really made me feel better. And God's up in heaven going, what just happened? Why did you apologize to me? I'm not the one who's mad at you. I'm not the one whose feelings you hurt. I'm not the one you forgot. I'm not the one that you preached that lousy sermon about. Mark, I got all the time in the world up here. It's fine. But, you know, Mike, he feels differently. You don't need to apologize to me, God says. You need to apologize to Him. We can't just tell God, I did this dumb thing. I'm so sorry, Lord. Thanks for your grace. And we're selfish and we're insensitive and we're abrasive. We need to own up to that. And we need to apologize for that. And we need to do our best to reconcile with that person and do better next time. And look, I get it. Reconciliation is not always possible. Maybe the person has passed away. Sometimes the best thing we can do is to leave people alone. Going back to them is going to reopen the wound for them. I think the key here is this. If going to them is going to help them, or it's going to help the two of you to reconcile, then I believe it's a good idea. But if going to them is just going to make you feel better, it's going to make them feel worse, I'm not sure that's right at all. If you ever go and apologize to somebody and you know deep down in your heart the reason you're going is because you want them to apologize back, nope, doesn't work that way. That becomes manipulation, not reconciliation. I'm really sorry, and then you wait with a long pause for them to say something. You go to a friend, a neighbor, a family member, a former business partner, you apologize, let that be it. Now you might say, can you find it in your heart to forgive me? But you can't go expecting to get something else from them. It's not why you're there. I'm sure sorry I offended you, but after all, let's be honest, you were being a jerk. No, you don't get to do that. I'm sure I let you down. I'm sorry. Now, isn't there something you want to say to me? Remember a few weeks ago we talked about Romans 12:18. Remember what it says? If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. It doesn't say that we're going to be able to live at peace with everyone, but we can do our part to minimize the hostility, to try to build a bridge, even if the person doesn't reciprocate. We seek peace. And then we can go to bed at night in peace, even if our attempts at peace did not accomplish peace, even if they don't reciprocate. In that video clip that I showed you earlier, Kaya and Tate reconciled later on. But even if they had not, Tate did the right thing. He came. He told her he was sorry. He was man enough to say that he had not been man enough before. Jesus says, look, it's not enough to have never deliberately killed a person. We need to love people, even those who make us angry, even those that we resent, even those who refuse to love us back. Now let me offer one more word of warning before we wrap this up. Let's say that you're mad at somebody. You resent somebody. You feel bitter towards somebody. And it's really not their fault. It's all about you and how you're feeling. Maybe you're mad because they got the promotion and you did not. They came in first. You came in second. They earn more money than you. They're more gifted than you are. They got the girl. They got the guy. And you didn't. And then one Sunday you're in church. And you hear this wise, insightful, brilliant sermon about forgiveness. Okay? And you think, I better go. I need to go tell them right now how sorry I am that I've hated them all this time. And they have no idea. Don't do it. The answer to that, I believe, is no. If the problem is your problem, and they're not the problem, and they don't know about the problem, if you go puke all over them, okay, you feel better because you puked, and sometimes you got to puke to feel better, but now they got puke all over them. Sorry for the analogy, but you know what I'm saying, right? Yeah, you got it out. Oh boy, don't you feel good? And they now feel terrible. And I'm confessing to you that I'm speaking from personal experience here. There was a guy that I really had some negative feelings about. He had no idea. I went to him thinking I'm being all nice and humble, and I apologized to him. And our relationship just got really weird after that. I didn't need to take that to him. Okay, so be wise here in all this. And then what about those who have wronged us? What if we're the victim? Jesus said in Matthew 18:15, if your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. Notice it doesn't say tell everybody you know what he did. It says go between the two of you, and if he listens to you, you've won your brother over. Now, it says more than that. There's a lot more in that text we're not going to get into. All I want you to see here is that the goal of reconciliation, it says if you have been wronged by the person, Jesus says in Matthew 18, you need to go and try to reconcile. And then here in the Sermon on the Mount, he said, if you are the one who has wronged somebody, then you need to go and apologize to them. Are you seeing a pattern here? Whether I'm the victim or I'm the guilty party, I need to go. That's what he said. This excuse, and I've heard this a lot in ministry, if they'd apologize to me, I'd forgive them. You know, I'm waiting for them to say something. I'm waiting for them to apologize. You know what? The Christian doesn't get to say that. Because Jesus doesn't say that's valid for a believer. We always begin the process of trying to restore the relationship. It's how Jesus raised the bar beyond forgiveness. Now, can we forgive from a distance? Sure. Can somebody forgive us from a distance? It's possible. But the ultimate goal is to restore the relationship, and I'm pretty convinced you cannot reconcile from a distance. I don't mean you can't make a long-distance phone call. I mean you can't keep people out there somewhere at a distance and reconcile at the same time. It doesn't work. Now, to be fair, reconciliation is not always wise. It's not always the goal. If you had an affair 10 years ago and it ended badly, I'm not saying, why don't you try to go patch that up? Don't do that. Okay? There may be somebody who has abused you emotionally, physically, sexually, and to re-engage with them in any way would be traumatic for you. Don't do that. You need to deal with it, but you don't have to re-engage with them if they're going to be toxic in your life. Just remember that unforgiveness is like that bomb in Germany. If you don't deal with it, one day it may explode and do tremendous damage. So let me give you a bottom line today, and then I want to tell you one more story. See, when it comes to anger, you're mad at her, she's mad at him, somebody's mad at the world, everybody's mad at everybody. Here's the bottom line. Reconciliation might happen. Forgiveness must happen. Okay, reconciliation doesn't always happen. That's not the command of God. That's just the hope and the goal. But friends, forgiveness is a must, right? Forgiveness is not an elective course for believers. It's required. Reconciliation is a worthy goal. It's a great effort to go for. But forgiveness is a command. and it impacts our spiritual health and our well-being. Reconciliation might happen, that'd be beautiful, but forgiveness has to happen. I cannot remember if I shared this story with you guys or not, so forgive me if I have. But I preached years ago at Fern Creek Christian Church. Gail and I were in Louisville from 1989 to 1996. We were just teenagers. Anyway, and during that time, to be honest, I ruined a friendship with a guy that I had known since middle school. I did some things to hurt him. Frankly, he did some things to hurt me. And he left our church angry and bitter. And I didn't talk to him for 2, 3, 4 years. I'm not sure. And we were getting ready to move from Kentucky to Indiana to start a new ministry. And I was kind of getting very nostalgic and reflective over the 7 years we were there in Louisville. And during that time, I began to realize that one of my greatest regrets was that broken relationship with that friend of mine. And so a couple of weeks before we left town, I sat down and I wrote him a letter. You remember those? You get an envelope and you put a stamp on it. And I told him how sorry I was for the things that I had done. And I asked him again if he would forgive me. And I told him I forgave him for the things that he had done. And then I mentioned a drawing that he had done. He was a good artist, and there was a picture that he had drawn of Jesus on the cross. And I mentioned that drawing, and I said something along the lines of, just remember, Jesus died because we all have things that we need to be forgiven of. And a week or two later, it was the night before my last Sunday at Fern Creek Christian. And I was there at the church office. I was packing up a few last things, and I heard a knock out at the front door. And I went out there, and there's this guy, and he's got that picture in a frame in his hand. And we talked, and we hugged each other, and we reconciled. It's not like we're best friends today. We're not really in touch. But that picture for me is a symbol of reconciliation. It's a reminder that you really can put the past in the past. And that was a healing moment for me. It not only restored our friendship, but it kind of released me in some ways to move on to that next chapter in our lives. And look, even if he had ignored the letter, if he had rejected my apology, if he had responded in anger, I had a chance to say again that I was sorry, to ask for forgiveness. No strings attached. And I felt at peace that I had done my part. Are you angry with anybody? Right now, is there somebody in your mind and you've got something against them and you haven't dealt with it? They've got something against you and you haven't dealt with it. I'm not asking you to get up and leave right this second. But what would happen if you made a phone call today? What would happen if you sent a text or sent an email or wrote one of those old-fashioned letters today? What would happen if in some way you apologized? That you tried to start things over again? That you end the cycle of anger? And that you allow God to work on your heart and to work through your words and maybe to change your life? Friends, you got to remember, reconciliation might happen, and man, it's beautiful when it does. But forgiveness, that's a command. It's not an option for us. It must happen. Let's pray. Well, Father, we kind of are faced with the reality that all of us have failed. All of us have let you down. We have certainly hurt friends and family members and those around us at one time or another. And we all stand in need of forgiveness. Now, the beauty of the gospel is that you forgive. And you forgive over and over again if we surrender to you. But you also put on us this responsibility that we must forgive others. And God, it can be hard. Anger sometimes just takes over and it's hard to release. It's hard to let go of bitterness. We ask that you change our hearts, that you'd soften us. Lord, would you give us a thick skin and a soft heart. Would you help us to release the hurts against us? Help us to have the courage to reach out to people that we've hurt. Tell them we're sorry. And Lord, give us the wisdom to know when to speak and when to be silent. We love you. We thank you for Christ who showed grace to us. May we show it to others in his name. Amen.